It's the Lifers Podcast with Scott Lucas, Gabe Rodriguez, and Ben Reiser. And now, here's Scott, Gabe, and Ben.
We killed OJ. Did we mention him last week? I don't remember. I hope we did.
No.
Ah, damn it. I wanted to take credit.
I thought he was still in jail.
Really?
No, he wasn't. He only spent 9 years in jail.
Yeah, you really thought he was still in jail?
I don't know.
I can't spend another second of my life talking about that fuckhead.
Okay. It's all over the news again, and I can't take it. There's more news than him. But do you remember where
you remember when there was more news than him back in the 90s?
No, but do you remember what
everyone pretended there wasn't?
Do you remember what we were doing the day that thing was going down when he was getting chased by the cop? Do you remember what we were doing?
What were we doing?
We were going to see Drive Like Jehu at the Lounge Axe.
I don't think so. Cause
same day. I looked it up just now and I remember it.
No, because when that happened, nope. I remember I was at, what's that place that did dollar drinks on Wednesday? Did you guys pick me up from there?
Kaiser's?
What? Like Kaiser's the Milwaukee Roadhouse?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
I remember watching that. What are you doing? Who cares?
Listen, fucking Drive Like Jehu.
Burn in hell, O.J. Simpson. It's lunchtime.
Yes.
But we're not live.
No.
And I'm not in Indianapolis, and Herb is not with me. But he is a little miffed with me.
Herb is?
Is it with me or at me? What is it?
I think it's with you. Miffed.
Miffed with me, not at me?
I think it might be at.
But he's upset because remember last week, or was it the week before, we were talking about that Evan Dando thing?
Yeah.
So the Evan Dando show... He was upset because we didn't mention that it was at Liars Club, and we didn't mention that it was his birthday party. So yeah. I'd like to mention, so Herb stops crying, that it was this Evan Dando show was at Liars Club, and it was for his birthday party. See, Herb is one of those guys that you think is cool, but he's not. He's not cool.
Herb is also one of those guys who you think doesn't listen to the podcast. But apparently he does.
Gabe, who's on the show today?
Kai Aarons. Not Key. I'm talking about Kai. K-I-I.
Is it Aarons?
Extraordinaire.
Aarons or Arens?
Aarons is my mind. That's how I say it.
All right. This episode is having kind of a difficult birth. Can we get into this, guys?
Sure.
Yes. So yes, Kai, who's done the artwork for a bunch of Local H records, one of them that is about to be re-released, but we had him on a couple of days ago, and it was not smooth.
It was a shit show.
It was a shit show.
Sure. Before and after, yes. During, I think it was okay.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Let's go back and read some of Ben's text messages before. Dudes, we are on. Where are you? FaceTime. Call ended. What in the fucking fuck are you guys doing? Gabe, I was there. Ben Reiser, fuck you. Your camera was on, but you weren't there. Then you came into a frame for a second and left. Get back on. What the fuck? Ben, would you like to explain what was a little hostile? Can you explain to the listeners?
All right. Well, I was in the middle of my Wisconsin Film Festival, and so we were doing a later recording than usual.
Right.
And at the last minute, the movie that I was hosting and then doing Q&A for was running late. So I maybe in a couple hours before showtime, I texted to say, hey, I'm going to be 15 minutes late. Can you please get in touch with Kai and let him know?
And I think that is when the phone came out, and then I forgot my phone.
Yeah, because you did say, I'm on it. So you had your phone at that point.
I texted him, and that was the last time I used the phone.
So then I get back home at like 9:45, and I get on there, and Kai's on, great, and Gabe's camera is on, but he's not in his chair, and Scott is nowhere to be found. So I'm then spending the next, I don't know, 15 minutes alone with Kai, who I don't know from a hole in the wall. Uh-huh. And he's like, is this how it normally is? Because now we're like a half an hour past showtime. Still no Scott. I see Gabe pop his head in for a half a second. He said, oh, yeah, I was talking to Gabe for like 10 minutes before you got here. Right. And he said he had to go do something. Well, 20 minutes later and 15 minutes after our showtime, Gabe still hasn't returned to his chair. And
so I Gabe see was him. There before you got there.
Gabe was yes. there before I got there.
I see.
Because I also was having computer troubles. I had to reboot like four times, and I was like, what the fuck is going on with this shit?
It was the eclipse.
Yeah.
I was there, Ben. I was there before you.
No. Yeah, but why did you leave? Why would you leave Kai alone and then leave Kai alone with me and then not check back for 20 minutes?
I was checking back. I just wasn't checking back in the frame. You didn't see my face, but I could see the screen.
And so you saw the two of us and figured, well, Scott's not here yet, so I'm just going to stay out and I'm going to go hang out and, what, toast some fucking Pop-Tarts? Fuck you. I'll say it again.
I might have been eating dinner or something.
Fuck you. Your camera was on, but you weren't there. These are hostile.
Yes. Every fuck that came out, Ben, it was one more time I wasn't going to come to the screen. Let's put it that way. I'm like, hold on a second. Scott's not there. Ben's being vulgar. We're not ready.
So then I'm calling Scott and I'm calling Gabe. Nobody's answering their phones.
I didn't have my phone.
Right.
I did not have my phone. I could not get this Zoom to get going.
Right.
Nothing's going. I am so frustrated. I've had a couple of drinks and I, you know how I get. And then I sit down. I might have dozed off for a few minutes. I was just so like, why is this not working? And then I got up and I go, wait, what happened? How long have I been out?
You woke up and there were a couple of bags of Taco Bell you hadn't eaten?
No. I look around for my phone, can't find my phone. And so then this takes away. Finally, I go back. I looked in the email. You sent a different link. So, I didn't see any of these wonderful texts until the next day. And then we get in. But you know what? Once we got in there, we jumped right in.
Yeah.
We got a good 35, 40 minutes out of this.
Yeah.
And then, and people are going to hear this, we get to a good point. I'm like, wow, we've saved this episode. Somehow we made this happen. I'm really good at this. I'm a pro. Let's do What's the Best?
What's the Best?
ABBA. And then just as it's about to cook, I'm like, here we go. My computer freezes up. And that hasn't happened in months. In months! So at that point, I was like, fuck this. I was like Gabe, you know. I was like Gabe 50 minutes earlier.
Yeah.
It's not easy over here, people, listeners. What were you going
to
say?
We tried to salvage What's the Best. We tried to keep it going. We got one roundup and we got to you and we're like, I don't know if it's going to work without Scott.
It's definitely not going to work without Scott.
Yeah. We tried.
But what we were seeing and hearing on our end was you, like, it was like a panorama of frustration from you. It was like, I'm getting up from the chair. I'm staring off into the distance. I'm sitting back down. We see your mouth moving. We can't hear a fucking thing. We are hearing ourselves coming back at us from whatever was going on with your speaker. And Kai gets this whole crazy game in his head going where he says something and then he lip syncs himself saying it again 10 seconds later as he hears it bouncing back from your computer. So he's entertaining himself for like a half an hour doing this. And Gabe and I are like pounding our heads against the wall. It was unbelievable.
Well, I haven't heard this yet, so yeah. I cannot wait. We'll see if it makes the episode. And I apologize to Kai because he was right in, and you had to go late. So I was like, let's talk to Kai. He's from LA.
Yeah.
So it would work out timing wise. Have you? Do you know that Gabe thought Pink Floyd, speaking of Pink Floyd, was from L.A.? Did you know that, Ben?
I think maybe in an early episode that got mentioned, but I had forgotten.
Yeah. We all know Gabe believes crazy things. He believes O.J. was innocent, and he thinks Pink Floyd is from L.A.
You must have told me something somewhere along the way that made me think they're from somewhere else other than England. It wasn't me.
The accents?
Yes.
The fact that they use you in color?
I never looked at their records, but you told me one day they're from L.A.
Hanging out in quiet desperation is the English way? I mean...
you can't set me up and say Pink Floyd's from England or from L.A. and then say, I can't believe you thought they're from L.A. You did it.
But I can't believe you bought it.
Then why do you do those things? Why do you prank people like this and think, I got them? I can't believe you took it.
All right. Here's something that's going to make you feel better. Yep. Justine thought Jethro Tull was from Texas.
The Jethro Tull or Ian Anderson?
Did Ian Anderson die the other day?
I don't think so.
Okay. I don't know what Jethro Tull's been coming up lately.
How did you get it that they're from Texas?
Now, okay, I thought about this. And this actually makes a lot more sense than you thinking they're from L.A. Jethro.
Oh, Jethro. Yeah, Jethro.
Yeah, Jethro. She's like, oh, they're from Texas.
But that makes me wonder, where did Jethro Tull come up with the name Jethro Tull? What is that a reference to?
Ooh, well, good thing you got a computer in front of you.
Yeah, okay.
But he is a pretty fluent flautist. is that a thing?
His favorite food is flautas.
He being Ian Anderson. Or is it Ian Ashbury? Who is it?
It's Ian.
Well, get Anderson. This. Jethro Tull, the person, was born in 1674.
In Texas.
He was an English agriculturalist from Berkshire, who scholars say helped to bring the British agricultural revolution to the country in the 18th century.
Amazing.
So Jethro Tull himself was a Brit.
Yes. Where would you get the idea that he was from Texas, Gabe?
I didn't get the idea. It was Justine. I never thought Jethro Tull was from there. I thought they're from England.
So, more importantly, were you able to piece together the Curb Your Enthusiasm finale from all your TikTok bits?
I got most of it. I got most of it. But the thing I didn't
remember... How do you know?
I don't know, but I subscribed to HBO Max for 1 month. And I'm going to try and binge watch the episodes I didn't see before.
All 150 episodes?
I've seen about 80 or 90 of them.
Wow.
But I haven't seen the most top rated one, the Palestine chicken one, or the Palestinian chicken.
That's a good one. That's a pretty good one.
That's rated number one.
Quite timely right now.
I got to go watch it. Topical. That's on my list.
My favorite one is... I don't know what the name of it is, but it's the one where he goes to the halfway house with all the battered women. It's around the same time. May not be the same season, but it's around the same time. Oh, the best one is the Michael J. Fox episode. And little gay Greg. That's the best. What's the
best? Did you like the finale? Ben, did you see it?
I still haven't seen the finale.
What? We can't talk about it?
Well, no. I think Ben's aware that what we thought was going to happen happened.
What I predicted.
I don't know anything about it, but that's okay. I don't care.
We all thought it was going to happen.
But was it anticlimactic? Was it good? What did you think?
Okay, here's what I don't understand. Why is it okay now and everyone shat on it when it came out? And why is it now like a king move?
Because
it's a big time fuck you. If it's what I'm thinking you guys are implying, it's like you didn't like it the first time. Well, I'm going to do the same exact fucking thing for my own finale.
Right.
That's a king move. That's funny.
Yeah, but people are going for it.
It's like if Lost had a chance to redo its ending and did the same exact ending.
Yeah, you lost me.
Gabe, you really think that OJ's innocent? Or that's just something Scott told you?
No, he did it and we know it. He wrote a book about it.
All right.
If I did it. Now, what I want to know is there going to be a hidden book that comes out called "Yeah, I Did It." Peace out.
Boy.
Is the truth going to come out? Or is that just part of the thing? Like OJ himself died thinking he didn't do it.
You know what would be wild if now that he's dead, somebody else came out and admitted that they did it? Like,
yeah, it'd be wild. Proof. Highly unlikely and wild.
Yeah.
That would be like if Courtney Love died and then found out in her diary that she did pull the trigger.
First of all, it's not like that because that's not what happened.
There's people out there that have conspiracy theories that are pretty close to being believable.
And they're kooks. It's not what happened. All right, so it's not the same.
Okay, when Trump goes down, when he leaves this earth, there will be some secrets revealed.
Really?
Oh, a ton.
What is he keeping a secret from us, by the way? He's everything is in plain sight with that guy. He's the opposite of OJ.
No, he's but like, there's
he doesn't go, if I did it, he goes, yes, I did it. And you won't care.
People are covering for him and they're waiting for him to go.
You mean so half the country is covering for him?
Yes. But the people that know him best are saying, hold on, I can't reveal his real intentions here.
No one has got this guy's back. And if they do have his back, it's because, you know, they're expecting a payday.
Sure.
You can't have loyalty to a guy who doesn't have loyalty to anybody else.
If he's the king, you have to.
Otherwise, who the king, Ben? Who the king, Ben? You're almost done with this Hell Week.
I am.
What was the best movie you've seen all week?
There's a movie that I saw called Riddle of Fire. New movie, absolutely incredible. Shot on Super 16, and then they made a 35 print of it that we showed. It looks fantastic. It's about
like Reservoir Dogs.
Like Reservoir Dogs, but better. Great movie about kids in the woods, fucking around. It's kind of like a magical kingdom, but basically our own reality with some magic. Just brilliant. Brilliant, I tell you.
What do you think, Gabe? That sound like something you're going to check out?
I wasn't even listening. Sorry.
I saw something a great movie yesterday, Femme. Have you seen this Femme movie?
No.
It's great.
All right. I'm psyched.
Best movie of the year so far.
I'll tell you this. It was the first night of the festival, and I was coming down, came off of an elevator at one of our venues, and bumped into this father-son combo. Turned out to be, and the guy immediately said, that was some kind of trick you pulled on us with Lifers. Turned out they were Lifers podcast listeners, had come down from, I want to say Michigan or Minnesota, maybe Minnesota for the festival, which I don't know, but had listened to the podcast all the way. And apparently we pissed a lot of people off with that Seinfeld ending.
More than they pissed off with the original Seinfeld ending?
It seemed like it was at least a dead heat.
All right, if you're not aware of what happened, listen to last week's episode, which we warned you. It seemed like it was an anti-April Fool's episode, but it was like, not to toot my own horn, but it was like California songs. It's like it's supposed to be an anti-California song, but it's actually a California song. You get what I'm dishing out here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you smelling what I'm cooking?
It's dripping with irony.
Are you smelling what the Scott is cooking? It is dripping with irony. Yes. Yes. So if you go back and listen to the end, you'll hear. Well, let's just cut to the chase. It's a half an hour of the Seinfeld theme, which I didn't realize existed. And some genius had stretched it out to a half an hour. I was like, oh, we're using that. I went to see Matthew Sweet the other night, and Kelly Way was not happy about it. She was like, your privileges to come in here are being revoked. You can't come here anymore.
Wow.
Matthew Sweet, how is that holding up?
Holding up?
Good. Good. It sounded great. Stuff. Songs are great. You know, there's he busted out a couple songs I forgot about. I was like, wow. Yes, you do Netflix, Gabe?
I do Netflix. I don't know how much longer I'm going to do it.
Firstborn is on Netflix? Out of nowhere? Firstborn.
Is that the Bourne series?
It's like Tough Turf, but good.
Firstborn with an O-U-R-N-E?
No, B-O-R-N.
Isn't Firstborn one of those stepdad movies?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It's pretty good.
It's like the stepfather, evil stepfather.
Well, he's not this father yet, but he's moving in.
Right.
And he sends their mom down a bad path. Their mom, played by Terry Garr. Ooh. And Peter Weller plays the dude who's moved into their house. I don't know who one of the kids is, but one of the other kids is not Elijah Wood. Who's the Corey? One of the Corey. Corey Haim. But here's the kicker. And here's what almost made me turn it off. Motherfucking Robert Downey Jr. Again. Mm-mm-mm. He's in Tough Turf and this. The guy was ubiquitous in making me sick. Gabe, who do we have on the show today?
We already mentioned who's on the show. Kevin Tiesto. No, sorry. Kai Arons.
And he's going to talk about artwork that he's done for us, artwork that he's done for Liza Minnelli, Eagles of Death Metal, and his past as a rapper. A rapper mime? He was a mime and a rapper?
I don't know if those two things can cross at the same time. Rapping has to do with speech. A mime is speechless. You can't be both.
Maybe that's the joke, though. Maybe it's like Albert Brooks's mime. A rapping mime. I really think we're onto something here. Gabe, get on it.
Two things you'll never see me do. Rap or mime.
Put them together.
I'd be like a mute rapper.
I like to put you on mute.
I was at a karaoke thing last night, and this guy.
Oh, yeah? What's your karaoke song?
Can't Hardly Wait, as you know from seeing me do it at your wedding celebration. But there was a guy and a gal doing a duet, and we were sitting at the bar trying to, like, say which duo they reminded us of. And we were just naming every dumb duo. We went from, like, Sonny and Cher to Ike and Tina to whatever. Then it got stupid, and we were saying stuff like Coheed and Cambria.
Floyd.
Right. And then I said Shields and Yarnell. And, of course, being the oldest person at the bar, everyone looked at me like, what the fuck are you even talking about? Like, those were unfamiliar names.
Got it?
That's
the end of the story?
That's the end of my story. Well, we're talking about mimes, so I got into it.
Are we going to make you look up Firstborn? Look it up, look it up, look it up. Are we going to make you look up Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
That's what you want me to look up? Why would I look up Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
How do you have that book at your side all the time when you need it?
Because he shows up prepared. He shows up ready to work.
Yeah, it's not in here. I think it's after the time period.
Firstborn?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that settles it. Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Let's listen to the old horn dog talk about Phoebe Cates.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High is both cinema's great American teen sex comedy and its great American teen sex drama. This is the one teen movie towards which all previous teen movies led and from which all have subsequently proceeded. The heart, soul, brains, funny bone, gonads, and remaining vital organs of every other film contained in this book extend in one way or dozens of others from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I mean, he's got like two pages of this thing. You want me to find Phoebe Cates?
if you must.
Fast Times spawned an equally enduring female co-phenomenon, Phoebe Cates, emerging from a backyard pool in slow motion to the pulsating strains of Moving in Stereo by the Cars. She pops her red bikini top open.
Pulsating.
She pops her red bikini top open and blammo! At least two movie-going generations were rushed straight through puberty. The moment is elevated above mere exploitation, though, by virtue of being a fantasy in the mind of classmate Brad Hamilton, Judge Reinhold. He's watching her swim while he masturbates over a toilet. We see the vision right up to its mutually mortifying and nightmarish implosion when the non-fantasy Phoebe runs inside to use the bathroom and busts in on Judge stroking his gavel. Blammo! Puberty comes smashing back down hard in all its uncomfortable, ugly adolescent reality.
Who's a better Brad? Brad from Fast Times or Brad from Adventures in Babysitting?
Fast Times. Is Adventures in Babysitting a movie you return to?
Yes. Huh. I'm a big fan. I think it's the other great babysitting movie that Deborah Hill produced.
Deborah Hill, an unappreciated genius.
Put her up there with Polly Platt.
Speaking of which, we showed Christine last night at the festival.
Okay, here we fucking go. Were you there?
I was there for the first 5 minutes, but as soon as Badge of the Bone kicked in, I was like, you know what? I've got better things to do.
It's a great movie. And you can see my point of view is starting to grow, metastasize, if you will.
Yeah,
it's very satisfying to me.
Did we mention the official announcement of the 20th anniversary of whatever happened to PJ Souls?
Did we?
I thought we did during
when?
The body of the show. No, or the week before.
Here, I'm gonna do a radio spot for it. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Local H. Whatever happened to PJ Souls? 20th anniversary edition. Remastered from the original tapes. Coming late summer 2024 on GMP Records and Brutal Panda Records. Where are they now? Where were you then? How's that?
But I don't even need to do pitch shift on your voice. That was pretty impressive.
No, you don't. Thanksgiving. Hey, everybody. It's Kai Ahrens. Kai. What the hell's going on?
A lot of different things, you know, working on some art, working on some music, working on some music video.
Okay, working on some music. What's that about?
Well, I started I've been making music my whole life, pretty much starting probably around 86 up in my brother's room. My brother, Bryn, who's in a group called Flip.
Yes.
St. Paul, right. Minneapolis. But recently, I put out a few of my own songs, and I had the fortune to go on tour a year and a half ago and did a bunch of dates in, like, Scotland and the UK with a guy named James Bourne, who is in a boy band called Busted out of the UK. I never heard of them, but it turns out they sold out Wembley 12 nights in a row.
Wait, what? Is that possible?
Yeah. Busted. They were huge. They were
12 nights in a row, you say?
Yep.
The band's called Busted?
Busted, yep.
And you opened for them at Wembley?
No. No. I went on tour with the lead singer of that group. A few years ago, but they actually just got back together after a 20-year whatever and toured like mad and made a bunch of crazy dough.
If you can sell out 12 nights at Wembley, how are you not like an international sensation?
Exactly.
That doesn't.
It's insane.
You know, have you ever? I've gone to the Forum and been to sold out shows that I've created a poster for and didn't know a single song or even hear of the band.
I'm beginning to think that like selling out Wembley is like selling out the double door.
Those fuckers over in England will just go see anything at Wembley.
All right, Kai, here's the other thing. We need to get down to this. Pizza.
Oh.
You and me, pizza.
Tavern style. I never started calling it tavern style till people around here started.
Okay, here's the thing. You have been like watching us and you heard my shit about tavern style in LA.
Well,
bring it, Dolly.
Listen, man, I fucking have yet to find a pizza that I like in LA. LA knows nothing about pizza. And
can I just say Rainbow's got good pizza.
It's okay. It's good. It's good.
It's pretty good. It's good. All right. Go on. Come on. Bring it, Kai.
All right. Thin crust, crispy bottom, lots of fucking cheese to the point where it just like coagulates. Yeah. Homemade sausage that's got some spice on it. Homemade sauce that's got a little bit of spice and enough of it. And if you're going to go with the pepperonis, put them on top so they get crispy. I like onion in my pizza. I like the sausage. And on it, and if I'm with them, my dad, I'll get sauerkraut.
Wait. Stop.
I know that was going to happen.
Your dad's got to leave. Your dad is uninvited to this party.
If you've ever been to Savoy in East St. Paul on 7th Street.
Okay.
The best.
So you're from Minneapolis.
Yeah, was born in St. Paul, and like everybody from St. Paul, when they reached, 17 or 18, they moved to Minneapolis. And if you're from St. Paul, you'll usually say, hey, I'm from the Twin Cities. And then if you're from Minneapolis, you'll go, I'm from Minneapolis.
Right. Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right. Okay, but you're part of that whole thing. You're part of, like, St. Paul, Minneapolis, like the... some of the best music of all time.
Agreed.
Yeah. So tell us about growing up around there and the music and all that stuff.
Right. So I got into metal. Like my first concert in 79 was Priest on their Hellbent tour with
Hellbent for Leather.
Yeah. And then Kiss on their Dynasty tour, second to last show without Peter Criss.
Oh my God.
You know, even as a seventh grader for Fifth Row, I was ready to go home. Right. I fucking love Kiss. I like the early shit, the really simple, rudimentary. I think they're all actually decent musicians, especially Gene. And I love Peter's voice. But I liked Priest better, and they're still my favorite metal band, they both reached their lowest lows. A little insider for you, I could probably say this now, the album Monster was like mostly recorded in my garage and mixed in my garage. I sing a few of what's supposed to be Gene's parts on some song, like I'm here, sing some of the low parts on probably the worst Kiss album of all time.
Wow, that's Monster. A claim to fame. That's a claim
Kiss
to infamy.
Has a record called Monster.
Yeah, and I think they were hoping for an endorsement, but I don't know. That's probably what was on the minds of them. A very interesting sorted past. So, like, the first thing,
lay down a string bean. Let's go.
Here we go. So, my brother was in a band called Obsession, and they were actually a really amazing fucking metal band. and my brother always included me in things. So they came up with this like intro for their set opening up for Twisted Sister and Dio, the Last in Line tour. And I think I was either in 10th or 11th grade, but I opened up for Twisted Sister and Dio as a mime.
Wow. Wow.
It wasn't cool, but it was cool. You know,
it's completely crazy. Cool.
I did it and got through it. But so, yeah, I grew up in the Twin Cities. I was a DJ at roller skating rinks in high school, then went around and opened up nightclubs. And then I started to record some of my own rap music as Jack the Rapper. I was trading my art skills. I was designing cassette singles for studio time with a bunch of the Prince band members. And
all right, Kai, why is cassette singles the greatest form of design? Tell us.
I'm trying to think if that it really is.
It's the wraparound. It's the wraparound, dude. Is.
That was my first official design gig. But as Jack the Rapper, I got to open up for EPMD and Gangstar and DJ Quick and Chubb Rock and Father MC.
Jesus Christ. DJ Quick?
Yeah, but that was all one show. But I won a contest. I won a rap contest, and I was the opener. And it was cool. You know, I knew a lot about rock and roll and performance, and when I went and saw Public Enemy, I was pissed. I loved the fucking record so much. But when I went and saw it live and they just dropped a needle dot on the record and the record was skipping and they didn't even have the instrumental version, so they were rapping over the fucking rap.
Right.
I'm like, this can be beat. Fucking Jack the Rapper. I'm going to take what I know about Kiss, Alice Cooper, Queen, and Bowie, and I'm going to try to put that into the rap world a little bit. Of course, I did none of that.
How'd that work out for you?
Weird Al Yankovic of rap, but that was my idea. And that took me to New York in 91, where I was hosting karaoke shows and did one for the guy who started Woodstock. And that's how I became the designer for Woodstock 94. And that's how Flip played Woodstock 99. And that's really how my art career got started. And right, that was close to the time that I don't know how you and I originally contact each other, but I did some artwork for you, I believe, when I was still working at Twin Tone.
Well, here's what happened is you did the cover for No Fun.
No Fun. Yep.
Which to me was, it didn't really feel like that, like it was a political record. But when your cover showed up on the scene and it was, you know, American flag made of bacon, I was like, this is a political record, no matter what people think, you know? And that's when I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, man. And well, you know, so, that's also a piece of artwork that will just live on. Like for you, a good song like that lives on, like Copacetic, like that artwork for me will always live on as like, I'll be able, I mean, I still, as you know, make silkscreen prints of it, et cetera.
Of course. But that's a piece of artwork that you had before you gave it to us on that record, right?
Yeah. I'm glad you said that because I wasn't going to, I was going to let
you. No, man.
But here's how it went down. I was working at Twin Tone Records and I was doing t-shirts for a company called Nice Man Merchandising. And they did a bunch of awesome shit. And one of them came up was a Marilyn Manson. So I'm like, oh, okay. What would I do if I was Marilyn Manson? And I was like, okay. I was literally at the grocery store. I saw the bacon and I saw how that could be a flag. And I went, oh. Yeah. So I went to Twin Tone and dropped it in the scanner, flat down on the scanner. Then I went home and I ate it. But I made that artwork and it got rejected. And I was like, wow, this is
Who rejected it?
Marilyn. Yeah. I've got other stories about him, but we won't get into it. Anyway, but when you came along, dude, we did a show together. I don't know. Actually, it was after that at Edge Fest when Flip and I fucking saw Local H. And dude, you blew my mind. And you were like Flip's drummer, Kilo Bale's favorite band. We'd always be rocking your shit. You know,
oh, well.
You are an unsung hero in rock and roll, and you know.
And
okay,
let's talk about the PJ Souls cover.
All right.
So, like for me, like that record wouldn't have happened if it weren't for you. Like what you did with the cover and the way you got it. Like, tell us about doing the shoot with PJ.
I don't remember how I got a hold of PJ Souls, but I flew to LA and went to her fucking house, and she was super duper cool. And
so great.
So cool. She was extra friendly, and we took a bunch of fucking photos, and she was just game for whatever we wanted to do for it. She was honored that her character was being made into an album. You know, she's a pop art icon in film and, you know, rock and roll high school, what have you.
Yeah.
So, and that's pretty much the story of it. And yeah, I was really happy with that cover.
How did you know? Did you just have her number? You just have everybody's number, Kai? What the fuck?
PJ Souls. I don't know. Like, there, I'm oddly connected in a lot of different ways. Art brings you to places that, you normally wouldn't, because you are the vacation of everyone's mind when you create art. Like, that's a good spot to be.
Okay, say that again.
You know, you're like the vacation of everybody's mind when you create art for them.
Cool. I want to make sure we got that.
So hold on a second, Kai. You're telling me that the inner picture with PJ Souls, that was just you reaching out to her saying, we got this idea of a record and we want to put you on it, right?
Yeah.
But yeah. Isn't there a different person on the cover, or is it, that's not her though, right?
That's her.
I'm trying to remember now. There is a different girl.
But what's sweet about it and what's wonderful about it is on the inside, it's actually PJ.
Yep.
Here's the question I wanted to ask you for 20 years since we're talking about it.
Wes was
the one. He said to me, he said, Gabe, we're working on a record cover and the artist wants to get all this paraphernalia from Local H. We want to set the walls up with all these pictures of the, you know, the band and all this stuff. Where's my stuff?
That's your stuff?
That's my stuff.
Fuck. I don't know.
I'm kidding. It is my stuff. But I'm just saying. I'm not asking for it. I don't need it back.
Oh, I feel horrible about that. I really don't know through moves and stuff.
You don't know where any of this shit is. We've been asking you for this stuff for a year. No. And you're like, I don't know where it is.
Wait, can all of you, or at least two or three of you, explain the story that I keep hearing about how the artwork on the original CD is compressed in some way or the wrong something, and now you've gone ahead and fixed it?
All right, here's what happened. Like, Kai did this great artwork, and it is one of my, probably my favorite cover that we've ever done. And
thanks, man. And
these fucking morons, you remember when like Zeppelin 3 came out on CD, right? Kai, you know what I'm talking about? And it had the sort of like lines around it, like sort of.
Yes.
Like,
yep.
Like a letterboxed version of it. That's what they did to PJ Souls.
They framed the image. You didn't want a line around the image.
It should be unframed. And what Kai had done is he had made it so that the legs went to the ends of the universe, right?
Yeah.
They made a frame.
There's no accounting for taste. Especially when there's a drummer involved. If the drummer starts chiming in on art ideas, you're done.
All right. Kai, how do you know that a drummer has moved into your neighborhood?
Oh, God. How?
All the garbage is gone and your dog is pregnant.
All right. Wah, 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 wah.
How do you know if the stage is level?
If the drummer
is drooling from both sides of the mouth. Yeah.
There you go.
Wow.
Anyways,
you want to keep this going?
No,
we can do this all night.
No.
Anyway, what's great about this reissue is we can finally fix this because your cover is so great. And
how did you recreate it? And let me tell you what happened on my end. at some point, probably 10 years ago, I dropped one hard drive that I've never been able to resurrect. I looked on every fucking disc. I dug out SideQuest discs. Oh, I was searching high and low. I thought I found it. I kept going to Kinko's because my phone wouldn't even read it. It's not even Kinko's now.
We appreciate everything you did. But like,
I lost all your shit.
I know. That's what happens, man.
We just found a pristine copy of the CD and did a high resolution scan of it and touched it up enough so it doesn't get the Mirai effect on it when you scan a printed piece.
Cool.
And between a couple of people, we have a vinyl version that's just about ready and a CD version that's just about ready. And I hope we do it justice. I mean, we're not doing anything to change it. You know, it's going to be intact the way it is.
Well, we can't fuck it up like those assholes did back in the day. All right, well, let's move on to 12 Angry Months.
Oh, cool. Because
this was a big thing, a big back and forth thing between us, like trying to find the right image.
Yep.
And your original idea for 12 Angry Months was this image that ended up being Eagles of Death Metal.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
I'm going to say this. You passed on my all-time favorite album cover.
I did. Yes.
You said it was a little too Scorpions.
And you know I love Scorpions.
I'm sending Uli Roth over to your fucking house to play.
Do you know Uli John Roth?
Yeah, he's going to come to your house and play Sales of Sharon backwards with his teeth.
Him and Kirk Hammett.
No, I don't know Uli, but he just played a 3-hour show at the Whiskey, and I wish I would have been there.
Dude, Gabe and I are huge Uli fans.
But you know what? That album cover for Eagles of Death Metal was perfect.
All right, it worked for Eagles.
Yep.
But my thing was like for 12 Angry Months.
Yeah.
It didn't work. But you had this idea.
The paper shredder is what ended up being used, right?
All right, so how did that happen, the paper shredder idea?
God, fuck if I know, man. It's like, you know how sometimes probably when you're writing a song and you just like, the riff comes up and then there it is and that's that day and the next day is the next day. I'm sure I saw a design and I'm like, I'm going, okay, what are we gonna do? What are we gonna do? Shredder's kind of rad. Okay, that looks kind of like static and fucking, you know, just really straightforward. Because you're serious. You're not like, there isn't much humor in what was happening with this record. And
right.
Can I admit?
Have all of those print files.
Yeah. Can I admit something?
Hold on to him. We'll talk to you in
3 years. Then.
In the anniversary re-release.
Yeah. 3 years. Yeah. What do you got, Ben?
Can I admit something embarrassing about 12 Angry Months?
Sure.
For me personally. It wasn't until about 3 weeks ago that I finally realized, and this is like a year after, Scott, you and I saw this fucking thing together, and you're like, oh, I've never seen this. And I was like, well, okay, that's fine. But it didn't occur to me until a month ago that it's a play, the title's a play on 12 Angry Men.
You didn't get that?
No, I never got that. That's even after so we sat and watched obvious. The movie together. I know. It's almost too obvious, right? Thank you, Kai. Thank you, Kai.
Jesus Christ. Even Gabe got this. Gabe.
No, he didn't.
Not right away, but I got it. I never saw 12 Angry Men, though, but I knew about it. There's a movie called 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
Kai, can you tell us, how did you get into doing art?
Well, I think when I was like 7 years old, I was going to estate sales with my mother, and I bought a book on brutalism art and fonts. And at seven, I don't know why, but I started making my own font and I got really fucking into it. I was very obsessed with Sid and Marty Croft and Lidsville. And he's now a good friend of mine. And I just started creating logos on my notebooks, and I made this, you know, the awesome hockey game you'd play as a kid that had those players that, well, I took the fucking two defensemen, lead guitar, bass, right? And then I turned the center into my lead singer, replaced the outfits. And then the goalie, I somehow had a riser, and I managed to get the drums up there, and I had like a full-on interactive rock concert that I lit. So, I mean, early on, listening to fucking Queen 2 and looking at the album cover, I was just gone trying to figure out how they flipped Ogre Battle. And wow. To me, you know, that's a place that I went to then that I've never left. I've just, that was clearly going to be my lane. And I had a brother who, I'll just say it, in my opinion, is a rock and roll genius. And an unbelievable front man. He'll be the first one to tell you. But anyway, I just felt I could never make music like him. So I'm going to do the art, and I'm going to do radio and all that sort of thing.
So that's always out of music is what you were doing.
Oh, yeah.
All right. What is brutalism?
Now, that's kind of like big, chunky cement buildings with oblong shapes coming out of it. Like I got a good example, like of some of the fonts that you might see from that is shit like this, you know? And for some reason I just was like, wow, this is so out there. This is, and that kind of got me started. And then of course, Snoopy and all the other things that you see around that you want to enjoy. Yeah. And, man.
You saying Snoopy is brutalist?
No. Oh. But he does have that nose thing that kind of comes out.
Yeah. It's a pretty brutalist nose.
Have gone on to make records with everybody. What's the favorite record that you've made with anybody?
Well, you know, oddly enough, I've done more concert posters than I had albums. So, like, concert poster-wise, my favorite is... probably my Liza Minnelli live at the Hollywood Bowl.
Holy shit. Really? Liza poster?
I've done three. And so the first time that I did artwork for the Hollywood Bowl, it was for the Liza concert. And no, actually it was Beck Spoon in management, and then it became Liza. So, but anyway, so the manager of Liza hit me up. The show was in August and said in June that Liza loves the design, approved, let's go. And it was one of those designs, like maybe even like a song where it takes, you're like done in a half hour. It's like, I know what I'm doing.
Right.
Execute, done, walk away because you know it's right.
Right.
But anyway, that was one of them. So I went to the concert, just proud as a peacock. I had a couple booths set up. We sold a fuck ton of posters. It was nuts. Liza, who knew? But it was the right design, and she gave two nights of really great performances. There it is. Yeah, there it is.
That is amazing.
Wow, that's a great poster.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
That's amazing, dude.
So anyway, I went backstage before the show, and I brought my posters. I had two of them there. Another one that was photographed by an amazing photographer who did a bunch of familiar Rolling Stones, a guy named Guy Webster allowed me to use some photos that looked a lot like her mother. But anyway, so I went backstage with my posters, and the people from the Hollywood Bowl go, "You can't get those signed." I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Hide them. Liza doesn't know they were made." And I'm like, "What?" So I look over at that fucking manager. I think his name was Gary, and I just look at him. I gave him the fucking stink eye, but I couldn't say anything because it's not my place.
Right.
I go and I watch the concert. I get over it. You know, she brings you back. She brings you back to pure joy with her performance and her fucking vibrato. And after the show, I decided just to go back. I got backstage passes. I'm going to go. I go back there and I see Liza. And I see Kelly and Sharon Osbourne walk in holding my posters that they bought and a Sharpie. And they walk right up to Liza and go, "Liza, will you sign our poster?" And Liza goes, "What is this? Oh, my God, I love this poster. Gary, what? I didn't know. Come here, Gary." And they go in this back room and you hear some fucking shit talking going on.
Yeah.
They did, because she was completely blindsided by this dickhead. Anyway, so when she comes walking by me, I go, "Hi, I'm Kai. I made the posters." "Oh my God, they're so beautiful." I'm like, "Will you sign one for me and my mother?" And she goes, "Oh, I gotta go do a meet and greet tomorrow night." And she goes, "Go in my dressing room and wait there." And I'm like, okay, so now I'm going into Liza's dressing room.
Yeah, you are.
I'm in there for like 45 minutes waiting for her, right? So all of a sudden the door opens up, she walks in, looks up and sees me, and she goes, "Sorry, yeah." I'm Kai, you invited me here, this is my poster. And she proceeds to sign one for me and one for my mother. My mother also has had an unusual name, LaVey, LaVae. But even though I spelt it out slowly, letter by letter, it said to Ladar, LADAAR. I don't even know how she arrived at that. But there you go. There's my Liza story.
But what did your mom do?
Oh, she loved it. She loved it.
I mean, but what did she do? Like before you came along, what was she doing?
Happy housewife.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yep. And what? She did a fucking fantastic job.
Yeah.
I'm one of these people lucky in life to not have the worry of a fucked up parent directive that could take my mind other places than where it was allowed to go in design and
right.
Supportive, but never picking favorites and never, you know, calling anyone a princess or the best or the champ. You know, it's always just on the level, which I appreciate too.
Dude, can we talk about the champ? So, like, somebody the other day was...
A movie.
Yes. Okay, Ricky Schroeder, the champ. Somebody was like, they posted something on Twitter, and they're like, what's the best crying scene? What's the
best? My God, the champ.
And somebody posted Ricky Schroeder, and I started crying within 10 seconds. Like, just boom, I was crying.
Is it the scene at the very end?
Oh, come on, champ. Wake up. Wake up, champ. And then he goes over to Jack Warden and is like, hey, let's wake up, champ. And Jack Warden starts crying. And you're like, oh, I'm done. If Jack Warden is crying, I got no chance. Champ.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Gabe, you know Champ?
That's the Champ. That was Ricky Schroeder? Or Rick Schroeder?
Well, it was Ricky back in the day.
Kai, you're doing very well in L.A. Proud of you.
Thank you, man.
Midwest boy doing well out there.
You know,
at what point did
20
you...
20 years.
Yeah, right. Okay, at what point did you say, I'm not moving back?
Day one?
Seriously?
Yeah. I was like, here's what happened to me. I went to Coachella. That's what usually happens. A week after I got there, I went to fucking Coachella. I did ecstasy and saw Radiohead and just walked around barefoot and didn't see any Bud Light logos. And I just saw a million fucking awesome fans that continue to be awesome for like the next 10 years. It was like, there's no place like I had never experienced anything like that. And coming there and living in my art gallery and the first art show that Shepard Fairey did, the piece of art that was in that show was the cover of the LA Weekly that week. So I just had like the things were going my way, you know?
Right.
But I'm always pushing it. I'm always like, looking in open doors and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. What record was Radiohead on that? Was that In Rainbows?
Yeah, it's probably fucking, yeah. To me, I was done after OK Computer, personally. I mean,
You really want to fight?
Nah, I'll stick to the Benz.
Oh, dude. You Benz people really drive me up the fucking wall.
Fucking In Rainbows is a little too math rock and smart.
Oh, you're nuts, Junior. I can't really
wrap my arms around that shit.
Holy shit.
Maybe I'm not cool enough. I don't know.
You're not. Speaking of cool, Gabe, unleash the question.
All right. We do have a canned question we ask our guests. I'm going to give it to you now. If you had to pick between two bands, you could only listen to one or the other. You're on a deserted island. I'm going to give you the first one is Iron Maiden.
I get it. The first one's Iron Maiden.
I know you're a big Priest fan, so Iron Maiden or The Replacements.
Replacements. Yep.
Of course. Gabe, you knew you weren't going to win this.
Yes, I was trying to push the Priest in him, but now...
Well, I was front row, and I slept in a refrigerator box in the middle of winter to be front row for Number of Beast tour. And
what?
Yeah, dude. Right, Great American Music, right by the Met Center, and it was fucking Priest, Screaming for Vengeance, and it was Maiden, Number of the Beast, and I think it was with Give Me an R, Rock Me.
Oh, Helix.
Helix, Rock Me. Did Dolly Parton's Backwoods Barbie album in 2010, maybe?
Tell us about it, man. What are you hiding? Here we go.
There it is.
He's got it.
Holy it is. Shit. So did you get to meet her?
Many times.
What was that like?
It's fucking fantastic. I like that photo.
Holy shit, dude.
But
that's amazing.
So I was at a Dodgers game, and a good friend of mine, Danny Nozell, who manages Dolly, was like, well, we got this record called Backwoods Barbie, and we don't really have an idea for it. And
enter Kai.
Smoked a little bit of weed sitting there with my friend Steven Chereau, awesome dude from Minnesota as well, was in a band called, what were they called?
Helix.
No, it's very close. Kick Tracy. Anyway, I said, why don't we turn her into the Silver Mudflap Girl? And Dolly loved it right away. And
that's a great idea, dude. That's a great idea.
And La Chapelle was hired to photograph the whole thing. And
wow.
all of a sudden, he canceled. And I'm like, I have a camera. I know what to do with it. Let me come and be the person to do that. So they sent me there 2 weeks in advance and gave me the clicker to her house up in Smoky Mountains and some crazy directions that you take a left at a Baptist church and another left right by a guy who's probably working on his transmission. And sure as shit, he was. And he's like, I'm like, where's Dolly's house? It's behind that wall, but you ain't getting in like that. And I said, I am too. And I go, click. And then they go, But so I got to go in and get to know her life, you know?
Wow. What's her life like?
Humble, actually. She has a bunch of homes. She has small homes. She had like Jimmy Dean sausage up in her freezer. And I got to go into her, you know, her wig closet and just really feel like her vibe. And it was so cool of them to allow me just to experience that, going to Dollywood and getting all that stuff together.
Yeah.
One of the coolest things that happened is they knew they needed a tour book, right? So they brought me to one of her homes, a tiny little home where she gets most of her dresses made. It has one room with all the sewing equipment
and coats of many colors.
Of course, of course. And right on the living room table, there were 10 three-ring binders of her entire life in photos. So I spent the whole entire day looking at Dolly's entire life, and it was amazing. And they wanted me to cherry pick all of them. And like you said, Scott, best fucking photo ever.
It's the best. It's the best. What's the best? Fucking amazing.
So that became the poster that I did for the Hollywood Bowl show.
Yeah, of course. It had to be.
Yep. And
good taste. You got good taste, kid.
I'm an armchair quarterback visionary. I don't know what you would call it, but it's my favorite hobby.
That's pretty good. Pretty
pick
good.
Bad fonts and pick great photos.
So are you ready to play What's the Best with us?
What's the best? I'm down. Let's play.
Here we go. What's the best? Ben.
Yes.
What's the best? ABBA. Now, I have been waiting for this for a long, long time.
Well, how did you decide to make this the occasion?
Well, here's the thing. you know, we all watched the eclipse today. So my whole day was very Pink Floyd. Mm. And I sent a message to Kai. I was like, Pink Floyd or ABBA? And Kai was like, don't be stupid, ABBA. So we're going to do ABBA.
Oh, gotcha. Nice. All right.
So you get to go first, Kai.
All right.
I believe, am I going last?
I don't know. I feel like Gabe's supposed to.
I was last week.
Oh, you were last week.
Okay, so it's going to be Kai, it's going to be Ben, it's going to be Gabe, and I'm going to be last.
All right.
So all right. Don't fuck up, guys.
All right.
Here we go. What's the best? One of the greatest bands of all time, ABBA.
Yep.
Kai, take it away. Your first choice is what?
Dancing Queen.
Jesus Christ. Of course it is. Now, here's what's amazing about ABBA. And when we do these things, like, we try to do like this, deep cut thing. But ABBA is all about, like, the most popular songs are the best songs. They're a maximalist band, right? They're not trying to hide anything. They're like, dude, our biggest song?
Yeah.
Dancing Queen.
Yeah.
It's our best song.
Excuses about it. It's just perfection.
It's perfection.
Like, the construction of the song, the segues from the verses into the chorus, the tempo, the volumes of everything, the majesty, face to face, the sexuality. It's crazy. You're breaking up, Scott. You're excited. You must be sweating.
Yeah, his excitement is showing up through the signal.
Yeah, your Wi-Fi is fucked.
He might have to disconnect and come back in on this one.
Am I done?
No, you're still there. Let me hear you again.
Oh, no, it's
maybe
terrible.
You should connect again.
Yeah, hang up and call in again. But don't stop your other thing from recording.
As soon as he jumped when he took Dancing Queen.
You can't hear us at all?
I hate this day.
And there's a time delay as well, Scott.
I can hear you guys. Can you hear me?
Barely.
Well, now we're hearing you on a huge delay, but we want you to hang up and call back in. Thank you.
Yep, because we'll go into either Gabe or Benjamin's favorite ABBA song right now.
That's exactly what we'll do.
Is he doing that?
Who even knows what's going on with him?
No, he's got to reboot for sure. Rejoin.
Reboot.
There he goes. He left now. I think.
I'll be back.
Jesus Christ, hang up. Holy
Where'd
God.
Where'd he go, Tatooine? What the fuck is this?
This has been a rough go of it tonight.
I wish we would have been able to talk a little more about Iron Maiden.
We had the whole thing two episodes ago, we were talking Iron Maiden.
Those first fucking two records... I like them the best. I like Deano's version of Iron Maiden better. I love Number of the Beast. I think Peace of Mind is a good album. Then after that, they all turn into soccer anthems that sound like, like river dancing soccer anthems with. I mean, I can tell where that shit came from. You know, their parents were at some pub and it's like, oh, Dave Murray's like, oh, let me amplify that. I mean, that's what it is.
That's the best. That's the best segment we've ever had on the show.
On this bit, this little Maiden bit.
Somehow we find the biggest Deano fans in the world, and then when Bruce comes, people fall off. I don't know what it is. Bruce?
We know what it is. It's Bruce. And diddly 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 diddly.
Whoa, he was like unbelievable on those fucking records. And I just saw Power Trip, dude, and he was hitting the fucking notes.
Oh, yes. He's a pro.
Don't let him pick the set list, and don't let him talk too long in between songs, because it's like, it's painful.
There's certain people that don't like much after Peace of Mind, and I don't understand it, because Power Slave is my favorite album.
That's cool. That album's cool. It's slick.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it sounds. Oh, yes. Power Slave is, I remember that tour. And what was the tour after that where you know they're in trouble when the set is White Ice? Was that Somewhere in Time?
Somewhere in Time. They were victims of 87. 87, everybody turned into something
you're
else.
You're going to blame it on the year, huh?
Yes.
There's plenty of good albums in 87.
Give me a good record that came out in 87 that holds up today.
I'll take a look. I will take a look.
Probably. Yeah, that's a good fucking question, dude. I got to Google that.
87.
Right
now. That production is it,
was,
doesn't.
Was hold. Pleased to meet me, 87?
Who's that?
Please, by the way, Pleased to Meet Me is my favorite Replacements album.
It's a masterpiece. But yeah. I feel like I can't even pick I can't pick favorite songs or albums or Replacements. It's all just one big masterwork.
I like how you guys were giving Bash and Pop credit too. Okay. Here you go, man. The best fucking albums in 87, Prince, Sign of the Times.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable record. Joshua Tree by U2. Unbelievable. Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me by The Cure. Faith by George Michael. Amazing. Kick by INXS. Blow away. And you know what? The fucking comeback for Aerosmith, Permanent Vacation. Killer. Killer record.
Wait a minute. Here's one. Jesus and Mary Chain, Darklands. That's a great album.
I don't know it, but I do like it. I need to listen to that.
Yes, you do.
Electric by The Cult. Yes.
Def Leppard, Hysteria.
Nope.
You lost us, Ben. You lost us.
High and Dry, I'll take.
Oh, yes. High and Dry. Now we're talking. But most rock, like heavy rock bands in 87, just turned to garbage.
It's true.
Production-wise.
Well, Guns N' Roses came out that year. But whatever. I'm so over that band.
Garbage. Garbage.
Like,
hopefully Scott can get back in.
Hey guys, guess what?
What?
I gotta go take a shit.
Okay. All right, let's call it a night.
Bye.
Thank you, Kai. It was great. Oh, okay. Well, that was a little fast.
Hello, my friends. Wave your hands for the show. They cleared the floor, you chewed more.